tonight on Arena. We hear from post-punk performance poet Sinead O'Brien and Roxanna Nicklaim of Fair City and Laura Quirk of Limoncello at the first Fortnight Festival. Five one double 51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Today is Nullag na Mann, and I hope that Manon na Héireann, in fact, Manon an Domhan na Fada, all of our female listeners are having a very special day. So to celebrate Nullag na Mann, we've asked Sinead Gleeson, the editor of The Art of the Glimpse, her collection of 100 Irish short stories, to look at some stories by women writers, and she's come up with four real humdingers that we'll take a look at over the next 15 or 20 minutes or so. I wonder to what extent, Sinead, when you were choosing the stories for us for tonight, did the whole idea of Nullag na Mann, was it in your mind? Did you choose with that festival in mind?
Very much so, Sean. I think anybody who isn't familiar with the day, traditionally it's the day that women are asked to, you know, they're told they can put their feet up after the hard work, the domestic work, the household labour of the 12 days of Christmas and running around after everybody else. So I wanted to look at stories that challenge the idea of what it is to be a woman in the home, or to be, the female role, whether that's mother or sister or daughter, and the kind of duties and impositions that are so often put up upon women by either their families or by society or by their own body in these cases. So there are four very different stories and they're not all Irish, but I hope that kind of will resound with people on this particular day.
The husband stitch, the title of this is enough to make you quake. Well, to make me quake at any rate, your first choice of story by Carmen Murillo. Is it Machado? Is that how I say her surname?
Machado, yeah, Machado.
Machado. Now, this comes from our collection.
In fact, she's...
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, I think I've been on with you before discussing her work, Sean. We've discussed her short stories and she published a memoir last year, and I think it's just a very distinct and unique kind of writer. So this story comes from that collection, Her Body and Other Parties.
Now, I was reading a writer today who said that when this story, The Husband Stitch, is taught in a fiction workshop, it's unlike any other teaching experience that they have. The men in the class don't speak. Maybe if you explain the few ideas around, or the few versions of what that title refers to, The Husband Stitch, we'll get an idea why perhaps men go very quiet at this story.
Well, the story is the story of a young woman who meets a young man, which is what happens at the start, and she's passionately and sort of wholly, bodily in love with him. And the story kind of traces their whole relationship, but also does a lot of other things in the meantime. At one point in the story, she has a baby, and the husband stitch is referred to as a certain kind of nod and wink conversation that happens between husbands and doctors, and did at one time, that would might happen to a woman's body after she has delivered a baby. To make things a bit more pleasurable for a man down the road after children. So the whole idea is quite horrifying, but all what Maria Machado does in her work all the time is subvert and sort of pillory a lot of the time. So the husband in this story does ask for this to be done, but it's not really about the birth and it's not really about their child. It's about the fact that this woman all through her life has a green ribbon around her neck, and the husband wants to know what it's for and he wants to untie it. And the whole the way through the story and their life, he asks her about it. And it actually, it mimics an old story from folklore, the idea of a woman wearing a ribbon around her neck and every man she encounters being enticed by her, but being enticed by the mystery of the ribbon. You know, what is it? Why can't I have it? Why can't I take it off you? So the story builds towards that he gets increasingly more interested in what the ribbon is, what it represents and why she won't allow him near it.
Would you read a little section from The Husband Stitch for us, Sinead?
Certainly. I'll read quite near to the start. And I think it really, they get married very young, this couple, and they're just full of desire and love for each other. And the story starts with her basically wanting this man. She's obsessed with the idea of him. So I'll just read a bit from the start. In the beginning, I know I want him before he does. This isn't how things are done, but this is how I am going to do them. I'm at a neighbour's party with my parents and I'm 17. Though my father didn't notice, I drank half a glass of white wine in the kitchen a few minutes ago with the neighbour's teenage daughter, and everything is soft like a fresh oil painting. The boy is not facing me, but I see the muscles of his neck and upper back, how he fairly strains out of his button-down shirt. I run slick. It isn't that I don't have choices. I am beautiful. I have a pretty mouth. I have a breast that heaves out of my dresses in a way that seems innocent and perverse all at the same time. I am a good girl from a good family. But he is a little craggy in that way that sometimes men are. And I want. And it just ends with that. Not even I want him, just I want. It's a great closing paragraph.
It certainly is. And that whole idea of want and any sort of sexual desire and the expression of sexual love is all over this story. There are no holds barred at all. It's very explicit, but not in any kind of prurient way.
No, it's actually, and it's a really interesting way to show a very a marriage that's very sexual and very very full of desire all through the years, because the story goes on for decades. It goes, you know, they do have this baby, and the baby grows up and goes to college, and all through their life they're still very connected. They're very happy. They're very physically interested in each other. But one thing that Machado does, when I say combining very modern elements with this kind of folkloric fairy tale, what she also does is, as well as looking at this woman's life and asking what it is to be a mother and be desired and be female and be married, she brings in all these other strange other little stories. So you get sort of 10 or 12 mini stories within the story, including one of a mother and daughter who go to Paris and stay in a hotel. The mother gets sick. The daughter's sent to get the doctor. When she comes back, the mother's gone. The room is different. It's been repainted. All the furniture is changed around. And the hotel staff tell her, "You're mad. You were never here. We don't know you. Who are you speaking of?" And so she's really interested in bringing in all different types of female stories also throughout the story, you can, and if anyone is interested in it, you can actually read it online. It was published by Granta and it's on the Granta website. And she does this little kind of stage directions almost, which she advises you in which voice to read each section of the story. So she's incredibly multi-layered, skilled sort of writer. Even the work is very feminist, but she's dealing with an awful lot of different things. She wrote a memoir this year and it was unlike anything I'd ever heard in my life, in that she did different genres for different chapters. So one part of her life was a road trip, one part was written like Mrs. Dalloway, another part was like lesbian pulp. So she's somebody who likes to change things up and gear up and down and move between genres. She's a very multi-genre kind of writer, but very literary too. But I think she's brilliant.
What about that? I mean, I accept what you're saying about bringing in all the other women's stories. That is an interesting aspect to the story. But I wanted to get back to the couple at the centre of it, and I wanted to find out what was going to happen with that green ribbon, which we're not going to tell anybody, because it isn't the joy of reading it that you find out about that. But do those little diversions into other stories, do they get in the way of the thrust of the main plot for you, or did they just add layers to it?
I know exactly what you mean, because the central story is so compelling that you don't want to be distracted from it. At the same time, I think the whole point of a story like this is to show the multiplicity of womanhood, to show that there are many ways to be female, to be a mother, to be a daughter, to be loved, to be not loved. And I think that's what she's trying to do, to show you that while I'm telling you a conventional love story chronologically from start to finish, and it, you know, and there's we won't reveal the ending because you do find out about the green ribbon, she's trying to show you that there are loads of other lives that maybe aren't being lived in this way, and that the experience of lived womanhood varies for everybody. And I think that's what's so clever about it, that sort of weaving. It's kind of like an accordion type story with all these other little pieces in between. But I thought it really worked.
All right, that's The Husband Stitch by Carmen Mario Machado, the first choice for Sinead Gleeson for today, Nullag na Mban. It's a long enough short story, and those little diversions certainly add to the length of it. The second story that you've chosen for us, The Girl, this is a much shorter short story for sure, Sinead.
I'm very fond of short story writers who can do things with extreme brevity, and this story is 650 words, so it's extremely short. It's less than a couple of pages, and it's a writer I think is very well known in America but is not as well known over here, called Jamaica Kincaid. She's been publishing for years. She's won an awful lot of awards. She's Antiguan American, so she writes a lot about her, the experience of the immigrant, the experience of being a woman of colour, and this is a story of hers that it's probably one of her best known stories. It's called Girl. and it's sort of written as an incantation almost. It's a mother back from, you know, Antigua telling her daughter, this is how you need to be if you want someone to notice you, but not notice you too much, but notice you enough to get you a husband, but get you a husband that doesn't want to look at other women. And it's basically a sort of it reads like a poem or a letter from a mother to a daughter, sort of, but it's quite chastising. It's like a set of instructions. It's a monologue, even though there are little bits of brackets in the story where the daughter is trying to get a word in edgeways and you can hear the mother isn't listening. But I think she hasn't been published here massively, but Picador are about to publish 10 of her books over the next couple of years, including the collection At the Bottom of the River that this story, Girl, comes from. Right. It was first published in 1983.
Maybe we could hear a section from this. And this really is, it's a kind of a home economics lesson, because it's a rather chastising mother that's involved here in more ways than one. But let's hear the section that you're going to read for us, a little bit of a recipe or cooking advice you're going to give us here, Sinead.
Yeah, and also I just pointed the whole two pages. There's a lot. She repeats phrases, and again, it's the idea. Like it's almost you get sort of like transfixed by listening to the same words and phrases keep coming up. But you'll hear a sense of that in this bit. This is from the middle of the story, where she's being told again more advice from her mother. This is how to sew on a button. This is how to make a buttonhole for the button you have just sewed on. This is how to hem a dress when you see the hem coming down to prevent yourself from looking like the slut I know you were so bent on becoming. This is how you iron your father's khaki shirt so it doesn't have a crease. This is how you iron your father's khaki pants so they don't have a crease. This is how you grow okra far from the house because okra harbours red ants. This is how you smile to someone you don't like very much. This is how you smile to someone you don't like at all. This is how you smile to someone you like completely. And the whole story is like that. It's rhythmic. It's like a chant almost.
Yeah, and as you say, there are phrases that are repeated time and time again, but the one that stopped me in my tracks, and I presume stops lots of people in their tracks when they read it, is the reference constantly, you had it there, stop your hem from coming down and so to present yourself from looking like the slut I know you are so bent on becoming. She repeats this phrase using the word slut time and time again.
It's so full on, and again, what's contained within the story. It's obviously coming from a place of love, but it's coming from a place of fear, and it's trying to project shame onto the daughter that you shouldn't want to be looked at. You don't want to be looked at too much, and you don't want people to speak about you or talk about you in a negative way. It's about how to be a wife, how to be a perfect woman, how to run a home. But the whole tone of it is there's no joy in it. There's nothing. She doesn't talk to her at all in the two pages about love. You know, this is what it's like to be loved. This is how it is to give love. It's all about the do's and don'ts. So it's very chastising, and because there's so little of the daughter in it, you already know a lot about their relationship. And I think that's the skill of a writer like this, to be able to do it in 650 words. She's not telling you what the relationship is, but she really is.
Well, you've no doubt about who's in charge or who thinks she's in charge at any rate when you get through those 650 words. That's Jamaica Kincaid, a story called Girl. And that's the second choice of Sinead Egan for us. Or I beg your pardon, Sinead Gleeson for us on this Nullig na Mann. Right, third choice. Another kind of surreal aspect I felt to this story, Sinead. This is Mrs. Fox by Sarah Hall. Tell me a little bit about Sarah Hall first. Very successful writer.
Yeah, very much so. This story actually won the BBC National Short Story Award in 2013. It was just the first time I read it, and it just blew me away. I hadn't seen or read anything like it. A lot of Sarah Hall's work, and she had a collection published just last year called Sudden Traveller. She's very interested in kind of anthropomorphic work. Sometimes women turn into creatures or have strange sort of lives, and yet there's something about her that the sentences are so brief and sparse. They're like a beat of a drum. She's very, very good at the sort of lyrical short sentence, but very good at bringing you into making very strange, surreal situations seem absolutely normal. And that's what she does so well in this story, which at the start seems to be about a married couple who are happy, content. No, nobody's got the upper hand. Everything seems fine. And what happens? And it's not a giveaway to say this either. Again, if you Google for this story on a website called Toast, you can read it, and I recommend you do. So very quickly into the story, what happens? Maybe I'll read the reading first, and I can tell you afterwards
sure.
what happens.
Well, let's hear this, because this is where we get the big bit of news, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. So they've gone out to the forest, the husband and wife, for a walk, and the wife's been acting strange for a couple of days. She's been throwing up, her skin looks funny. The husband is thinking, God, I wonder if she's ill. And they go out for a walk, and the wife starts to chase after a creature she sees in the forest. You think it's a bird, and then something else happens. So this is where we pick it up. At his feet, she sits, her tail rearing, exceptional winged ears, eyes like the spectrum of her blended fur. He kneels and with absolute tenderness touches the ruff of her neck. What can be decided in a few moments that will not be questioned for a lifetime? He collects her coat from the nearby bushes. He moves to place it gently around her. She does not resist. And his arms cautiously reach under, lifting her. The moderate weight of a mid-sized mammal, the scent of musk, gland, and faintly, faintly her perfume, a dirty rose. And still in the woods on the apron of grassland, no one is hiking, though soon there will be dogs tugging against leads, old couples, children gadding about. Down the path he walks, holding his fox. Her brightness escapes the coat at both ends. It is like trying to wrap fire. His warmth, her warmth, against his chest is astonishing for a wife who always felt the cold in her hands and feet. She is calm. She does not struggle. And he bears her sacrifice, a forest pieta.
There you go. That's Sinead Gleeson reading from Mrs. Fox by Sarah Hall, the third of four stories that she's chosen for us on today, Nulling Them On. There is something beautiful in this story in some ways, Sinead. The fact that love endures and that you accept the person you love, no matter what he or she may be or may become, you've got to stick with them type of thing.
That's exactly what the story is about. It's not about that man and woman, wife turns into fox, even though it is. But the rest of the story is about the fact that the husband is willing to accept her for who she is and doesn't want to let her go. And then obviously that's probably not going to be a sustainable situation, but he wants to believe that it is. And it is about the fact that love can't be decimated by even huge changes in somebody, even your wife becoming a fox. But it's a stunning, stunning story. And again, on a sentence level, I think it's superb. A lot of her work is quite like this. Yeah. And I think there's been a lot of people like Daisy Johnson, maybe coming after her, would be somebody who'd be very influenced by her. And I just think it's, I've read it several times since I first read it, and it gets better.
Well, there's two sides to the change aspect of it. Love endures even if your wife becomes a fox, or even if your husband doesn't become a fox. both loves kind of endure, which I think is interesting. Let's move on then to your final choice.
Yeah, why is it all on her?
Exactly. Your final choice then, close to home, this one, and delighted that you chose a Maeve Brennan story. Her birthday today, in fact, and this story is The Morning After the Big Fire. We're back in 48 Cherryfield Avenue. What's happening here?
Yeah, I could have picked, in terms of the connection to Nulling Them On and the domestic and the household, you could pick most of Maeve Brennan's stories, particularly anything from The Springs of Affection. Six or seven of those stories are set in Cherryfield Avenue, which is the house that Maeve Brennan actually grew up in. And I think so many of her stories are about the small spaces, are about the status and class around the house. She wrote a lot of stories about families called the Durdens, it's more about a marriage that's gone very bad. So there's one gas fire, one coal fire. There's a back bedroom that has lino, and the rest of the house is carpeted. So Maeve Brennan is really good at making political comments about relationships and about class and families by the things that they own and the furniture they have. And this is through all her work. But I decided to pick this story. It's a story I chose for the Art of the Glimpse. It's called The Morning After the Big Fire, and it's very short. And again, it's set in that house, and it's told to a child's eye point of view, which we assume might be Maeve. There was a garage at the back of the row of houses where she lived, and one day, great excitement, there's a fire. And everybody in the road is running around, sort of talking about it and wanting to be part of the action. And she's never forgotten it. And it's one of those things that when she looks back through her whole life, and she says in the first paragraph, we moved out of there when I was 18, but she never forgot that moment, the sense of danger and the proximity to it, while still feeling safe. And it's just wonderfully evocative story of childhood and nostalgia, but also very rooted in the home.
What section are you going to read from this for us?
I'm going to read to close to the end, because again, people don't think of Maeve Brennan as a funny writer, as a comic writer necessarily. Not in her fiction anyway. She is in her non-fiction. But at the end of this couple of paragraphs are very, I think it's just a brilliant line. It was not long before the McRorys put up another garage made of silvery, corrugated metal stuff that looked garish and glaring against our garden wall. It cut off more of our view than the old building had. My father said the odds were all against another fire there, but I remembered that fine dark morning with all the excitement and my own importance, and I longed for just another like it. This time, however, I was determined to discover the blaze before my father did, and I watched the garage closely, as much of it as I could see, for signs that it might be ready to go up again in flames. But I was disappointed. It stood, and was still standing, ugly as ever, when we left the house years later. But still, for a long time I used to think that if some child should steal around there with a match one night and set it blazing again, I would never blame her. As long as she let me be first with the news.
Yeah, it's a great finishing line, isn't it? That's the morning after the big fire from Maeve Brennan, the final choice of Sinead Gleeson on this Nothing the Man. So that, as you said, Sinead, available in The Art of the Glimpse, your own recent edition, 100 Irish Short Stories. It's also there, the original Maeve Brennan collection, Springs of Affection. It's also on the New Yorker website, isn't it? If you have a subscription, you can log in there and you can read everything, in fact, if you have a subscription, right back in the archives.
You actually can, and even better, our great writer Roddy Doyle was distantly related to Maeve Brennan, and he reads on the New Yorker Fiction Podcast. You can listen to it, and he discusses her story Christmas Eve with Deborah Treisman, and you can listen to Roddy reading the story and discussing the story. And it's funny, today on Twitter, a writer called Kat Hogan has been doing 100 days of the Art of the Glimpse hashtag, a sort of read-along where you read one story from the book in order. And as it happened, spookily, today was Maeve Brennan's story, so a lot of people were reading the story online today, which was wonderful to see.
Well, there you go. And if they're looking for three others, you've given us three great suggestions. Mrs. Fox, available on that Toast, and that's to.st is how the Toast magazine.
That's it.
And then the very first story that we spoke about, The Husband Stitch, is available on the Granta website. Can we get the Kincaid story anywhere, he's short as it is?
Not yet, but keep an eye out for Picador reissuing her story collection that it's from. I think it's going to be this year. It's called At the Bottom of the River, the collection it's in, but every story in that is just brilliant anyway, so it's worth maybe borrowboxing it from the library if you can't get to a bookshop at the moment.
Okay, listen, Sinead, and thanks very much for your suggestions for us on this Nothing to Man, and enjoy the rest of the evening, whatever it is you're getting up to or not getting up to, as the case may be.
Girl, Morgan,